Welcome back to another Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media into the world of enterprise IT. My name is John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matthew Brender.
And this week we've got a really great show. We have a friend of the podcast and a friend of us all on the podcast to talk about technical evangelism, the role, the myth, the legend. There are a lot of people with evangelist on their titles, especially in Silicon Valley. What the heck does that all mean? So really pleased to welcome to the show with us our one of our favorite people, Greg Nierman. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, hey, thanks for having me on.
Woo!
Hey now. Hey, Greg. Greg is an experienced technologist and podcaster, and he's been active for years in the community. Right now, his podcast is called Speaking in Tech, and it's featured over at The Register. So, Greg, actually, you're probably one of the most widely listened to technical commentators in the enterprise IT community, I think. What do you think about that?
It's completely dumb luck. I mean, the whole thing with The Register, obviously, John, as you know, I started doing this with Mark Farley back when we did InfoSmack years ago, and that just happened to occur over a beer during Storage Networking World, that I thought, we're having these great conversations at the bar. Why don't we find a platform where we can share these conversations? And so podcasting was a natural outlet for that. But the connection with The Register came probably about midway through our tenure with InfoSmack, and it was a great connection. That they were looking for content like that, and I was all too eager to find an outlet with a broad audience. I think they get like 6 million or some monthly visitors. So it kind of just raised the platform and pretty much dumb luck.
Well, all of us can take advantage of some dumb luck. So that's really interesting. We may get into talking more about the podcast, but one of the main topic we wanted to talk about today was really this stuff called technical evangelism. You are currently employed with a title somewhat approximating technical evangelist. And so we kind of wanted to dive deeper into that and find out what that means, how your brand and the company's brand interact, you know, just what do you actually do every day? So glad to have you on. Because I don't know what I do every day.
As best I can.
What do you say you do here, Greg?
Yeah. What is your job? Do you have a job here? Can you explain it to? Has your boss ever come to you and said, "Greg, what do you do here for us?"
Actually, my boss and I are probably the only two that understand the scope of my role. But I should take a step back.
Yeah.
It was kind of a situation with Hitachi Data Systems that they were looking for new and creative ways to help tell the story. And so they didn't necessarily have the title technology evangelist in mind. I think they were looking for somebody that a new position. This was not something I came into filling somebody else's shoes. So there really wasn't a hardened definition of the job. It kind of evolved through the interview process and through kind of understanding what they were looking for and kind of what I was looking for just career-wise in the next step of what I was going to do if I was going to make a big move like that. Because prior to Hitachi, I was working for Kai Corporation as a vice president for 12 years. So I was in no hurry to leave, but I had a long-standing relationship with Hitachi by virtue of my work at Kai. And so I knew a lot of the personalities inside the company. And so I think from a chemistry perspective, it was a good fit right off the bat. I think the challenge was, how do we define this role and what kind of objectives would we set up for this role? So it was one of those things. I'm in a very fortunate position that I really got to help write my own job title and my own job description. And there's a lot of synergy right off the bat as we talk through what this role would do. And it's funny, kind of the expectations that I had come before I started my first day, and then how it's evolved since then, it's been amazing, because there really is no – well, first of all, I've got the greatest job in the world with a company that I think has got the greatest culture of any of the companies I've ever worked with. And it probably took about 3 months of working at Hitachi Data Systems before to kind of decompress from the environment that I was working in. And I don't know if it's an East Coast, West Coast thing, but it was certainly a lot more intense where I used to work. And Hitachi is intense, but in a different way. And everybody was so friendly and supportive and nice and bending over backwards. It's kind of like, wow, is there something in the water here? Everybody's so nice. But I do think, you know, there's a distinct HDS culture. And I had to learn how to kind of adopt into that. And a lot of people that come to HDS from other companies share similar experiences where it's just a very different culture than what other folks are used to. And
that's really great, Greg. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was going to ask. So you said your job role really evolved along the way, and you helped build it from the start. So let's start with what you helped build. So what were those parameters you put around the amorphous opportunity you had?
Sure. Well, obviously, at a high level, it was to help tell the story. And obviously, coming from a background at Kai where I was, you know, from a technical, almost pre-sales engineering role, doing whiteboard sessions and technical walkthroughs in front of customers, to the social media activities I was involved with, which were completely separate from Kai. There's different elements of that that they wanted to pull into that they found value in, and to kind of bring some new tools and not just for me, but for other people inside the company to leverage and use, and kind of help bring them along as far as help tell the HDS story. Once I got inside, though, I quickly found myself being involved in engineering discussions and other meetings, product planning meetings, and got in much deeper than I think I originally thought I was going to when I walked in the door, which is really gratifying because the organization, you know, every organization's got their hierarchy, but it's relatively flat from a communication perspective. So having the opportunity to work with at all different levels of the company to understand the technology and to be able to take that information and be able to share that, whether it's through blogging, social media. I've been also doing executive briefing center briefings when we bring customers in from all over the world. And so it's kind of a mix of activities. It's certainly outbound communication about what HDS is doing, but there's an underside to that, which really gets involved into understanding the technology, which is one of those things I really didn't expect walking in the door, but it's extremely beneficial to be able to tell the story.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to jump in with a question now. Do you find that the word evangelist opens up some of those opportunities rather than shutting it down? And the flip side to that question is, what words did you not choose because you thought they were too limiting or that they carried the wrong message? Because I think a lot of our listeners, we just did a podcast on where social media sits in organizations. And this is a little bit tangential to that conversation, but I think useful as we think about titles and job roles of, do you emphasize the technical part or the communications piece? And words matter. Words matter in terms of how you introduce yourself and what people think and their reactions. So
words matter a lot. And I didn't really appreciate it as much until I went to Europe a few months ago, and we're doing some planning meetings. We do these information forums around the world, and I was doing a big data presentation for one in Germany and one in London. And one of the questions that came up was, "Oh, your title." And I'm like, what's wrong with my title? I'm like, well, technology evangelist just has a different connotation in Europe than it does in the States. And I had no appreciation of that. So they said, well, what if we call you a technology strategist? Okay, that's fine if that massages it a little bit. But I think that it's the evangelist part of it that carries some weight in Europe that doesn't necessarily carry in the U.S., and I had no appreciation for that at all. And I'm not really hung up too much on the title. I think trying to describe my role of helping tell the story is what an evangelist does, and it just seemed like a natural name to me. And again, it was going through the interview process, we kind of settled on a title that works for all of us. And there wasn't much of a debate about it. I guess one of the things I was careful about is that, you know, I've got kind of a split personality. There's a social media Greg that does the podcasting and tweeting and stuff like that. And then there's kind of the day-to-day work that I did when I was at Kai Corporation. And the trap that I didn't want to fall into was to be, because as in the industry, I'm just basically known for my social media activities. And I was slightly concerned about having this social media tag. I was very clear. I didn't want to be the social media guy. And they were, you know, right up front saying, no, that's not what we're looking for here. You know, we've got people that do social media. But there was a connotation and a potential limiting, especially walking in the door and trying to establish credibility with people who have never met me before. I didn't want to be just that social media guy.
And by that, Greg, what do you think you would have got tagged with if you were the social media guy, like DJing, like Twitter handles and stuff like that? Is that what you?
Yeah, I think there's an image of playing on Facebook all day. And
oh, there always is that image. I'm asked at least once a week.
I'm 13 years old. I'm glad to let everyone know that I'm 13 years old and I tweet for a living because that's what my title says.
Yeah. Well, it's brilliant though. This is exactly a reason why. So HDS has great social media programs. They have marketing managers on it. They, you know, they do that kind of corporate cadence and information. They produce lots of good collateral. They do content marketing, et cetera, et cetera. But, and often, you know, you bring the interns into that, even though that's also a mistake. But I think, Greg, this is a really interesting example of bringing in somebody who's fairly senior and who has, you know, some weight to them, because you can sit there and talk about the technical details and people take you seriously, and you can take that. And as that, it both, it's an example of using social with somebody who's almost a, you know, you're a corporate spokesperson, but probably with a little bit different remit, a little bit different feel, right?
Well, it's funny you say spokesperson, John, because one of the discussions we had early on was at Hitachi Data Systems, we have a defined spokespersons list. And I think by just the nature of my position, I kind of got thrown on a list, and I had a discussion about it with some of my team members. I said, you know, I really don't think that I want or should be a spokesperson for HDS, because the dynamic of the commentary that I do on Twitter, on my podcast and other things could be misinterpreted as an HDS position or speaking for HDS. And so I wouldn't say that there was a hard line drawn, but it certainly for me, I didn't want to put that burden on my teammates, and I certainly didn't want to have that burden on myself to now monitor and self-monitor everything that I'm saying.
Yeah, it was a really wise line in the sand there between the personal brand and the professional brand you were being offered. It's brilliant. I think something everyone listening should take note of, especially as that becomes the most common theme we bring up here on Geek Whispers, is the lines between personal and professional brand. So good call, man.
It's interesting because there's a lot of those little lines that come up that you can't really predict when you're coming into an environment where you're kind of creating this new role. And one of the things I was very candid with them about was that, you know, look, at some point somebody's going to call you and say, did you know that Greg said XYZ on a podcast, or Greg tweeted XYZ? And they kind of like, really? I'm like, no, trust me, this has happened when I was a guy. you're going to get that phone call someday. And it happened a few times. We were commenting on actually one of the partners that we worked with, a guy, hey, blah, blah, blah. The owner was able to listen to the podcast. He didn't know. So he called me into his office and asked me what was going on. I explained it to him, and it was all technically correct. And he said, oh, that's okay. I said, look, really, what you need to do is explain to them that my podcasting life is separate from, you know, my work life. And you know, one thing doesn't bleed over to another. And I really needed to have that independence to do the podcast I was doing. And one of the things that everybody was very clear with me is that they weren't going to be putting handcuffs on me. I could still do what I do. It was a very encouraging environment. I mean, that was part of my decision-making process that went into this when we got serious about the job offer, that there, nobody made any expectations coming in the door of any boundaries or anything like that. I mean, there's common sense stuff that I keep in mind, of course, that I'm not going to do anything to damage the Hitachi brand, but nobody put any handcuffs on me, and they haven't.
Well, I continue to be curious. I love an earlier thread of discussion where we were talking about the word evangelist again. So you're saying, you know, intentionally chosen, kind of open that space up. So it sounds like a combination of culture and setting that expectation. And that I'm curious, do you think that writing your own description, choosing those words carefully, as the people listening are thinking about their own career paths and what they want to do and how they want it to be interpreted, what kind of opportunities has that opened up for you? So obviously you negotiated right in the beginning and explained who you were, what you were bringing to the table. And it's seen in some ways, per your description, both as an asset and a bit of a liability, if you will, because you know that they'll get the phone call one day. So it has to be discussed up front. What would you say, again, in that negotiation process, what would you tell someone, what would you advise someone?
I was in a very fortunate position where I think they wanted me as much as I wanted them. And so we were both coming to the table with something at stake. And so it really, I think it's a very unique position to be in. It was kind of surreal for me to be in that spot and kind of help walk through and create the job description for the role. But I understood at a macro level what they were looking for. So coming into that conversation from an advice perspective, I think you need to understand not just the company and the technology that you're walking into, but you've got to also have to understand the culture and kind of make that assessment of, is that culture going to be good for me? And am I going to be good for that culture as well? And I know that was probably a question that came up. Anybody that's outside of any organization that's got such a unique culture to HDS, your first question is going to be, how are they going to be able to fit in and absorb and to work in this type of environment? And it's a fair question to ask. And I think that the culture piece of this is the one thing that I think some folks would probably underestimate when they're walking into an opportunity to kind of shape this type of a role.
It's interesting to think that a company that would give you a title like that, that wouldn't ask you necessarily to do something super traditional or old fashioned, may culturally be ready for someone like you to fulfill that role, to grow into it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of an interesting point too. If they're willing to have you put that on your business card, even if only in America, not in, EMEA, then they're willing.
Greg, what part of the organization are you in, actually?
Well, the group I fall under is marketing and communications, and specifically my boss, Marianne Gallo, who's the vice president of communications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find it odd to be in marketing now? Because you've been a technologist and a lot of different things.
Right. Not really, because the significant portion of my role with Kai Corporation was leading the marketing there. So it wasn't that unusual for me. What was unusual, I think, was besides obviously the culture that which you talked about, I've worked for really big companies. I started off out of college working for Ernst & Young. Then after Ernst & Young, went to work for a relatively small company, then went to Kai Corporation, which is a relatively small company, and then back to a large company like Hitachi Data Systems. And so I think just trying to understand the minutiae of a large company was a critical piece to that.
Yeah. This kind of role, I think all social media, you in a big corporation, we've talked about it amongst ourselves, right? You really kind of have to, part of it, kind of like any good program manager or product manager, this is the same sort of thing. You got to be able to float between in the ether and pick out, know who to go to and how to work by influence and all that sort of big company stuff. Well, Greg, it's interesting. We're talking about the role here. I don't know if you know this, but actually, there's a little bit of a self-aggrandizing story. But it's our podcast. I'm one of the hosts of the podcast, so if you can't tell a self-aggrandizing story on your own podcast, So I actually talked to Marianne as she was figuring out this role, and I actually helped write the job description. And she actually said to me, "I need a John Troyer. How can I hire a John Troyer?" So, which, by the way, is a very good way to get me to come to lunch. If you're like, flatter me like that, and I will come to lunch anywhere. But it was a really interesting conversation I had with Marianne because we were talking about, well, you don't really need a John Troyer because all of these roles are kind of different, and everybody brings their own personality to the role, their own background to the role, and this kind of personal brand evangelism. I'm comfortable with the word evangelism, so I'll stick with that. This kind of evangelism role. Which is, you know, based in social media, but it has technical credibility. It has a personal brand. You know, there are probably different flavors of it. And depending on what your company needs, your culture needs, your business objectives, you would hire different people, right? So we actually ended up our conversation with the idea, she has more of a journalism background. So she was thinking, well, maybe I hire a journalist, you know, who can tell stories. And that would be the right kind of person for this role. You know, another role is kind of, master of ceremonies. Another role would be kind of alpha geek. And there, you know, there's sort of, there are different flavors of this kind of thing. But one thing that conversation did start the process for me that has actually been solidified on this podcast is the concept that the corporate brand, God, we sound like a broken record today. The corporate brand is enhanced by the personal brand. So whoever she hired had to be the kind of person that could be a standalone master of ceremonies person that gets up on stage, you know, the kind of person that had a following or could develop a following, had an audience or could develop an audience, had a platform or could develop a platform. And I think that this is really synergistic, the personal and the corporate. And it's not the same thing as we've used analogies like, okay, well, you know, enterprise sales uses people, so you need people in social media. But this is a little bit different because of the media aspect and the performance aspect of what we do. That this having the personal and the corporate brand is synergistic. And I think we've actually seen some great examples of this in another field this week, which is when Nate Silver moved his operation. He went to the New York Times, 538.com, about all the election stuff. He now moved it over to ESPN and ABC. And his personal brand of being like this blogger wonk is enhanced by being part of the New York Times. And now he's going to have an even bigger audience by being part of ESPN and ABC. And he's going to be on TV and we're going to get sick of him. But the whole point is they both need each other, right? They're both better off because they're associated. And I somehow see an analogy, albeit at a much smaller scale and paycheck, with the kind of thing that all of us here on this podcast do. Am I crazy?
No,
not at all.
You're absolutely spot on, John. And I think, too, I think the challenge for companies in this particular kind of role, and I know you're sensitive to this, too, is that, you know, we all kind of build up our own personal brands. I wouldn't say that we have egos, but we certainly have that brand that we're conscious of. And I think sometimes it's a challenge for companies to identify good candidates that the brands are in sync with each other and complementary to each other. I don't know how prevalent of a problem that is, but I know that's something certainly conscious when you're trying to bring in somebody, you know, outside the company that may have their own distinct brand already.
Were some people inside Hitachi nervous about your brand?
You know what? I don't think that many people inside of Hitachi knew who I was.
Inconceivable. That's not possible.
I kept walking into situations that were, you know, some folks that had heard me were, you know, being very complimentary. They're listening to the podcast. But if you know the kind of podcast that we do in Speaking of Tech, that's, you don't know where they're coming from because it tends to be a little bit edgier. It's not necessarily,
rather clean cut.
Yeah, it can be very uncouth at times. And so when somebody approaches you and says, hey, you know, I listened to your podcast, you got to like wait a few seconds to see if they're smiling or yelling.
that's Southern for bless your heart for anybody who's listening. Yeah. So, well, and I think it raises a couple of interesting questions there in terms of that we have hashed out on the show, and I would love to hear your input, Greg, about what do you do? I feel my personal stance is that we all cultivate our personal brand, and just like anyone's good name, this has been true for ages. Your good name in some way is all you have. And social media perhaps amplifies it, makes it a little, makes the broadcast a little bigger. It makes more people potential Q-list celebrities, you know, for lack of a better word. But it can cut both ways. I mean, you said that Hitachi, that hadn't necessarily been your experience, but how's that in general been for you in terms of corporate versus personal brand and how to mesh the two?
You know, I've never really taken myself too seriously. I mean, I look at the numbers like everybody else, you know, the download numbers, how many followers do I have and things like that, and kind of gauge myself. Okay. You know,
should I help you with the follower numbers? Should I go unfollow you now? Keep that going.
But I think we all kind of take an assessment of, you know, am I successful in telling a story? And obviously there's different metrics to look at that. I've never really put too much weight on some of those. And I've also never really taken myself too seriously. I've come at it from the perspective of trying to figure out, am I successful getting the message across? And that, whether it's blogging, podcasting, tweeting. And so from that perspective, I tend to devalue my brand. The trap is if you come in, you know, waving that flag or trying to be that, you know, superhero brand, you really set a lot of false expectations, because this world is a goofy space to get your story across, to build credibility. And there's an ebb and flow to this that I know you guys understand. And I think the folks that take themselves way too seriously, and we know who they are in our industry, they create traps for themselves, and I think they make their lives a lot more difficult. And so I've always taken the approach of rather, you know, being more low key about it, and you know, setting the bar low.
let's recognize what we can do, and let's not try to measure ourselves against a million email drop of to a million email addresses or something like that. In terms of like demand gen or what we can actually accomplish.
Right. It's not like you're going to convert every listener to your podcast into a potential HTS customer. Like there has to be that schism between the two.
And man, I'm glad you brought that up, because and I don't know how frequently you guys listen to the podcast. I always never bring up HTS on the podcast. I probably go too far to the extreme on that. I identify what I can contribute to the conversation where it's necessary to make it clear, well, I'm coming from the HDS point of view on this particular storage technology. It's important to make those distinctions for the purposes of being transparent. But I've never, ever used the podcast as a platform to promote myself or the company I work for, which is a very dangerous thing to do. If they're curious about your background, they'll hunt around for it, they'll find out about it. And if they want to, you know, ask you questions about it later, and that's great. And that's happened a few times. I've actually been surprised at a few dinners where I didn't think anybody knew who I was, and they come up and say, "Oh, I listen to your podcast on a regular basis." Again, you wait to see if they're smiling or frowning. but I've never used the podcast as a platform to promote the company, and they understood that too when I came on board.
Yeah. So, well, Greg, my question, not so much are you using the podcast to promote your company, but could you replicate what you do on the podcast in a branded context?
You mean for Hitachi?
For HTS. And to be fair, we did talk to Brian Gracely about this in the Cloudcast. And when he was at EMC, he tried to replicate the Cloudcast podcast for EMC. And he's like, it just didn't gel. It just didn't feel right. The same things we were doing as independents simultaneously in a branded context didn't work. So we stopped.
No, I listened to that podcast, and I can understand Brian's challenge there. And it's kind of funny, John, because I'm going to throw a compliment your way. You know, we are, and I am, developing a podcast for HDS. And as a rule of thumb, and other people in the company are building podcasts and doing other things. And I said, you got to realize corporate podcasts suck. They suck really, really bad. But there is one podcast that is really good. And that's the VMware Communities podcast.
Oh, right again.
And I use that as an example, John. And I don't know if that, I mean, by nature is a communities-based podcast. And I use that as an example of, you know, for instance, the reason I think InfoSmack was successful and speaking in tech is relatively successful is because we were successful in creating that relationship with the Register, which helped us find an audience. And I think the challenge for corporate podcasts is, how do you find your audience? And I think, John, you kind of set the example for the rest of us, is that you built that audience based off of a community that is supportive of your company. And you leverage that audience as a platform for the podcast, which is absolute pure genius. And that's been the advice that I've given to other people that wanted to form a corporate podcast. I said, if you're going to just do this and just talk about how great your technology is, it's going to suck, because nobody wants to hear it. What they do want to hear is, they want to hear engagement with people that are outside the company, end users of your solutions, partners of your solutions. They want to understand the ecosystem, the community of what you do, and that's valuable to a broader audience. But just being an audio version of a press release, nobody's going to listen to that. Nobody cares about that.
And it's the it's not Florida, and we're not selling real estate, you know?
Yep.
Exactly.
Have your free breakfast.
That's right.
Listen to the seminar. Well, I don't know if you've heard me say this, but the secret of my podcast is, it's not actually a podcast. It's actually the campfire. It's actually a weekly campfire, and everybody joins in, and we tell stories every week. So that's the secret of it.
It works. But you had a foundation of an audience that is attending that campfire, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the challenge for anybody creating a podcast is you know, who's going to find what we say interesting? How do we discover our audience? How do we make this telling the story successful? And there's a critical element to that, because I think I've seen this happen where companies will say, you know, we like this idea, this whole podcasting thing, and they look at it like blogging. So we'll just kind of do a podcast and talk about our stuff. Just isn't very interesting.
Yeah, the world does not need more crappy media from corporations.
Well, it's so interesting. I feel like we've come full circle, which is a couple things I'm noticing from this conversation. Number one, marketing and communications people often don't want to identify themselves as marketing and communications people, because you get painted with a very negative, we must be a very self-loathing group. Which is intriguing, because then we find words that don't mean marketing and communications, because people say, oh my God, you're one of those people, right? And yet when you hear...
You say, if it's technology evangelist is covering up, then I'm a marketing person?
Yes.
Shh. You're not calling me that.
Hush now. And the other piece is that when you sort of get the opportunity to write your own job description, et cetera, I was having this conversation this week of when you decide how much of a unicorn to be, if you will, how much to differentiate yourself, how much to be the John Troyer, the Greg Nierman, the one and only at the company, the person who has a role that nobody else has, then you end up being happier and more successful. And so it's this very interesting sort of struggle between a corporate world that seems to want very much those what you provide, technical storytellers, so a real fusion of two skill sets, doing it elegantly and doing it well, and then not at all referring to yourself in that way.
And I'm going to take a lot away from this conversation with you, Greg, for two particular reasons. Number one, you went in being very, you admit that it was a lucky situation, but it's not such a unique lucky situation. We see in these big corporations that when somebody has some sort of X factor, unicorn factor, as we call it on the Geek Whisperers, like you do, to stand out in a crowd, people want that, and they may not know where to put it. So being ready to have a conversation about what you want your job to be is a really interesting mental exercise that I want to keep in mind and have other people keep in mind. And I really love that you set the stage properly. Like, you went in, you have a nice clear line between who you are on that podcast and all your glory and who you are when you're being an HDS evangelist. Like, and you kept those intentionally discreet and separated them and set the proper expectations. Like, hey, boss, you might get a call saying that I said such and such. And just, you really prepped the stage so that you could have a smooth transition into the role. And I really respect that.
Well, and you know, there's another side to this too. When I came on board to HDS, I would probably say that, you know, the first couple of months, I kept having to try to explain to people what a technology evangelist is. People internally inside the company who weren't familiar with my background, maybe weren't as engaged in social media. And I think that's something to be conscious of too, when you walk into a role like this, is that the evangelism just isn't about your company's technology externally. There's a lot of evangelism that takes place internally as well. Whether it's evangelizing yourself and your capabilities and your skills. In fact, we're going to be making some announcements, some very exciting announcements next month. And one of the things I'm doing right now is internally sharing information and doing some internal evangelism around this technology so that we all kind of have a kind of a common understanding when we come to market with a new technology, that we're all speaking that language and that we're all evangelists, because it's not just about one person in a company. You've got to be able to leverage the other folks that think this stuff is pretty cool, but they don't know how to get involved with it. And so a part of my role has also been, you know, trying to mentor and shepherd others in the organization who want to be evangelists and to get out there and help tell the story.
Well, my first question to you, Greg, which I think you kind of dodged, I think we're actually getting there, which is what the hell do you do? So we've talked about you're working on a podcast,
John. You know, it's like all marketing, right? It's drinking and guessing, right?
We are a floating bunch, just what's getting the.
So if I just keep talking, you'll forget about what I do. No.
So just, yeah, you.
But I'll remember that you just called yourself a marketer.
Yeah. You're developing a podcast. I've seen you on a video, which I'd love to talk about a little bit. I've seen you at meetings and different conferences and stuff. I've seen you, you know, leave your digital spoor on Facebook and Twitter as you go around. And then I've seen, you know, and you also do some internal communication and do some kind of internal technical marketing and mentoring. So we've talked about all that. Does that encompass it, or can you give us some other examples?
Well,
and to be fair, you've just been there for 6 months. So in corporate times, that's just like, that's baby steps so far.
It is baby steps, but you're right, John. And this is the kind of explanation that I was going through for the first couple of months. Like, so what do you do? What is your role? So coming right out of the gate, we developed a video series called I.O., which is available on YouTube, that Michael Hay, who's our CTO and senior or VP of engineering at HDS, it's a video series that Michael and I do monthly that kind of talks about some of the inside engineering taking place at HDS. So that's one thing we do, and that's part of what we're going to be spinning off the podcast to, is a weekly version, audio version of that. So that's monthly and going to be weekly with the podcast. There's also, if you go to hds.com, you'll see I do quite a bit of blogging on there. We do the global information forums all over the world. And one of the things I try to bring to the table is, and you guys all know this, is that sitting through a conference presentation where somebody's, you know, showing a PowerPoint presentation is boring as hell. So one of the things I thought that would be really cool is, well, why don't we create a panel discussion around not necessarily a hot button issue, but certainly one that has a lot of interest. And big data was obviously one of the ones that we did. And so I've led two panel discussions, one in London, one in Germany, where we had folks from inside the company and outside the company sit on the panel and talk about some of the topics around big data, not necessarily as a pitch or as a PowerPoint presentation that digs into the technology of it, but more kind of the higher level, what are some of the challenges that companies are facing as they engage with big data. So trying to infuse and leverage these information forums to something that's a little bit more interactive. We're going to take that a step further with engaging Twitter, doing live streams. We did a live stream of the one in London. But that helps create some social interest around these activities that we're doing as well. And a panel discussion is a great one to do that with. There's also a series of animations that I'm working on. I think there's two or three of them that are out now that talk about specific technologies in 5 minutes. and kind of just the one that I think is getting the most views right now is that we have a primary storage deduplication solution that we just announced not long ago. And so I did an animation around that, kind of explaining how this technology works and what the value of the technology is. And I probably got a plate of probably a dozen different technology topics like that that I'm building animations for. So it's kind of all over the board from an external evangelism perspective, including blogging, podcasting, video, and animations.
A marketing communications platform strategy.
That too.
Yeah, I like that. Well, Greg, if part of our job is, frankly, just to make corporate stuff not so boring, maybe that I think that's half of what we get paid for, all of us. Is there a danger that other parts of the, that you're duplicative of other parts of the organization, or, you know, that maybe other parts of the organization are jealous that hey, making those animated videos is our job? Do you think there's a danger at some places? I guess it depends on your culture.
It does. You know, I've not run into that. And I don't, it really is a highly collaborative environment. So I don't think I'd be stepping on anybody's toes. In fact, the reaction I'm beginning is just the opposite. The funny thing is I did a kind of a pilot animation around storage virtualization, it's just because I found this new tool, which I thought was really cool, and it's very low cost. And I showed it to a few people, and some of the executives just really jumped all over it. They loved it. And when I started sharing that with some of the different product managers, they're like, wow, can you do one of these for us? And I almost had to serve like a gatekeeping function to manage some expectations, because like I said, I've got a plate of about 12 of these ultimately going to be creating here in the near term. And it was actually the very opposite reaction. They looked at this skill set of storytelling as a way of, and once they saw the example, it wasn't me just describing it to them, but once they're actually seeing a demo of it, like, that's really cool. How can we get, you know, how can we get some attention for, you know, our product?
Okay. So jumping in, I want to ask the actual converse, John, of what you just asked in terms of, do people feel like you're stepping on toes? Cause I had this conversation recently with a friend who said he talked to his management chain and they said, we're very happy with what you're doing, but if you left, we wouldn't replace you because we can't, because you're one of a kind. And I wonder if you've had that experience, and when you have a one-of-a-kind role, do you feel more vulnerable because you're the only one, and are, again, the converse, are people actually envious? Because something I get with some regularity is, you know, do you ever do any work? All you do is seem to have fun. And it could be that I just really enjoy my job and that I refuse to be dreary about it. But I'm curious if you've had some of that. Again, it's a little bit of a unicorn experience, to use the term.
So, you know, I don't know. I've gotten no feedback or gotten any vibes that anybody was envious of this. You know, in fact, all the reception has been very, very positive. Say, yes, you know, we need to find new ways of telling our story and more creative ways of telling our story. This is really great. And so, again, you know, HDS is a very unique culture like that. And there's a spirit of cooperation and teamwork. And I've not experienced anything.
You know, or what about any concern of you're the only one who does that job? And when in corporate America, that can be a scary place to be out on that limb. So what's your thought about that?
I don't know. That would make me feel pretty valuable. You know, I don't think that's particularly intimidating at all. If you're able to carve out a niche for yourself, and that you're adding value in a unique way. I think the biggest challenge in being in this spot is kind of managing expectations of, you know, what you can deliver. And, you know, it was one of those things I think I spent a fair amount of time kind of downplaying the reputation that I had, because so much of it, I wouldn't say it's myth, but it's, you know, a social media persona can kind of take on a life of its own. And so I kind of got myself into the mode of kind of, you know, managing those expectations and tapping them down a little bit and kind of just being specific to, you know, execution activities and, you know, the video series, the podcasts, the animation series, and those things are just kept focused on, you know, what are our goals for these specific activities.
Yeah, I think that's wise. I mean, and my perception is in some other industries, not in enterprise IT, but more on the consumer side, and maybe 3 or 4 years ago, some social media, you know, rock star slash douchebags got kind of, they got a little ahead of themselves, and they started to become, think that their own, you know, shit didn't stink. So I think that was part of the social media backlash of a few years ago, that all these social media experts just thought they, just by sheer force of their good looks and personality, were somehow magic. And that's not it, right? It's about the work.
No, that's a really bad trap. You can't be successful doing that. And there's still people in our industry, in enterprise IT, that kind of inflate their personalities. And I think they're constantly trying to catch up to that myth that they've created for themselves. It's a bad thing to do. The one thing, you know, the people I respect most in this industry are some of the most humble people you'd ever meet. And John, I would include you on that list. For the great work that you've done at VMware, you know, you don't go around showboating, you know, you don't have this, it's all about me. And that's a great, you're a great example to other people in this industry and to myself that it isn't all about you. You know, you're part of a corporation in a community, and you've got a common set of goals and objectives, and you're just a part of that machinery that's doing it. You may be a more visible piece of that machinery, but you know, you're one of the folks that are helping execute on the strategy.
Yeah, I loved when we talked with Chuck Hollis. He talked about, you know, alignment and you know, Venn diagrams, and you know, ideally you should be overlapping a lot, you know, in mission and values, et cetera, with the company you work for, and then it works pretty well. And when you're not, then it doesn't work very well at all. Hey, Greg, I did want to say one more thing, that one of the dangers of being, you know, doing all this productivity of all this multimedia is actually there's a very tactical danger of being suddenly becoming the multimedia storytelling guy. And whereas in the old way of doing it, you would take $30,000 and do a video shoot, and you would take $50,000 and do an animation. All of a sudden, if Greg is the video guy, you know, you can find yourself in the trap of, oh, Greg will do it. And all of a sudden you find yourself like this video producer with no budget, which is just a bad place to be in. So watch out for that corner.
Oh, it could very well be. And I think, you know, I've kind of encountered a spot to where I've kind of had to manage everybody's expectations, not everybody's, but, you know, certainly product managers that are very enthusiastic for the products. They're like, oh, wow, I saw that animation you did. It'd be great if you did one of ours. And then it's just kind of, you know, realigning, you know, with management to make sure that you know, what are our priorities, what are the ones that we need to execute on first, and then working down and managing everybody else's expectations around that. Because you're absolutely right, John. I mean, that's a very easy pitfall to get into.
Yeah. And there's also this sense of that what you're offering to them for all intents and purposes is free. So therefore, what you do is free and for hire in a way. And something that's on the top of my mind is how you show not just the value of how these social media aspects of storytelling and redesigning the way you tell a story from a vendor, how those are important and interesting, but also showing that they have value, monetary value, to the point that you start having business students come to you and say, ask for a request, and then you say, all right, well, this is how much it costs between my time and energy, so that you have that cross-spending model.
You're absolutely right, Matt. There's value in the content that's being created, and you've got to balance that against the budget and time that you have to work with on that. But so far, my experience, at least the way that HGS works, is that hasn't been a concern. The biggest concern has been about bandwidth. You know, these animations and some of these videos take a lot of time and planning and other things. And so I've been very, very careful of kind of managing expectations right up front. And I think being able to see that kind of ahead and forecasting a bit as far as what your time commitment is going to be to do some of these activities is really important.
So, Greg, conversely, have you been hit with the ROI question yet? You're still in the early phases there, but at some point you have to justify your salary. Are people asking that question of you?
Not at all. Not at all. Because
Chris Gregg works for free. He works for Sunshine and Bacon.
That's right. That's it. I'm using it Sunday morning.
John's the new metric monger. Yeah.
Well, partially it's because HDS, frankly, even though it's a part of a big corp, bigger, huger conglomerate, you know, is actually pretty agile. You know, I think the more traditional of the marketing organization, the more social media people get asked for, you know, justification and. I don't know. Which is justified. It's justified to ask for justification if you're spending money on it.
Well, that's right. And I think because we do have folks that run social media and pay careful attention to the metrics, the social media metrics, you know, that's not really been a question that's been raised. And a lot of the content that I'm used or developing is being repurposed in different ways. You know, take for instance some of the animations, some of the videos, those are being used in part of customer presentations. You know, if that piece of business closes or doesn't close, you know, how much weight did my video have to do with it? It's a tough thing to weigh. It probably be a trap that I would try to avoid because I think with some of these things, it's difficult to put a dollar value on an ROI value on it, quite frankly. So, the question hasn't been asked. Again, it's still very early in my tenure, but I'm sure folks there will be different types of content that people will look at and say, how is this valuable to us? And it may not be a pure dollars and cents kind of a question. I would imagine those questions are going to be kind of more strategic.
Yeah. Well, I've seen the irregular output of corporate marketing, and that, I often ask that question myself. What value did that have? So you won't be alone.
One of the interesting things I'm hearing, again, sort of thinking of some summary thoughts from this conversation. So amazing conversation, pretty inspiring, actually, as I think about future roles for myself and what I would want to be called and how to manage that. I'm hearing, you know, title yourself something broad that you can grow and evolve into, which I think is really smart strategically. It's interesting that it is in some ways very much a MarCom role. Not a social media role, but uses the tools of social. But in some ways, your output is not the same as someone who would style themselves as a futurist or simply an amplifier. You are actually you're creating content as well, which seems to be also a part of the role. So there's something tangible that you can point to. It's not soft metrics. There are things that you can point to. The next level would be, like you said, perhaps down the road, thinking about the ROI on some of those things created. Or the value, a way to tell the story about the value. I just think those are two interesting points. So going broad and also having something tangible that you can point to and say, this is what I've created. This is what I've done since I've been here. Interesting.
Well, it's awesome, Greg. Really, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. It was fascinating. So Greg Neerman, the technical evangelist for Hitachi Data Systems. Greg, where can we find you and your output in your digital world online?
Well, I'm on blogs.hds.com, and a lot of the content that I'm creating, you'll see there. But also, I've got the podcast Speaking in Tech, which is on the Register every week. It's also, you can reference those on speakingintech.com.
Awesome. And you're Neerman on Twitter, but nobody can spell it. So don't even, you'll figure that
out. Nobody can spell it. So Google search Neerman. Good luck spelling it. Well, and that's, you know, it's funny. We talk about this podcast about personal brands and stuff like that. And I probably couldn't have had a worse Twitter name coming out of the game.
You know?
And it's my own.
Yeah. It's
what you're born with.
I thought I was so clever. Like, hey, all the other Neermans out there are going to be really pissed off that I got the Neerman Twitter account. I don't know how well that worked out. I mean, it's fine. It's one of those things, too, that if people are interested enough in what you're saying or doing, they'll find a way to find you.
We'll link to it over from geek-whispers.com. Anyway, great. Greg, I really enjoy your work. I try to catch Speaking in Tech as often as I can, which is fairly frequently. I love the show. So keep on keeping on, man.
And you guys are all regular guests on the show, John. You've been on a few times. In fact, one of our best episodes we've ever had, which was the Chad Sackage topless episode, you were part of the circle for that Google Hangout.
That will a day that will go down in infamy.
My eyes. That's all I have to say.
I keep getting anecdotal stories from people around EMC about how that picture, somebody took a snapshot and kind of sent a funny email around EMC. I understand it's still circulating.
Chad's,
content has a long tail. What we do. Yes.
And Chad's a good sport about that. Well, anyway, this has been another episode. This has been another episode of the Geek Whispers. We'll probably keep chatting here, but we'll talk to you next week. Ciao. You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.